The Great Canadian Talk Show.
It was only a couple of watts, but I brought the truth to everyone within three blocks of the west side of campus.
No way! Yes way!
And now, let's get right down to business with Marty Gold.
Welcome to the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. This is episode 35 in season 4. I'm Marty Gold. There's going to be a lot of ground to cover today, and I'm going to try to, in particular, focus on provincial matters. I've got lots coming up about City Hall. I can describe in the back part of the program actually what's coming up. Here at the front end, I want to thank those who've donated, who did donate during our winter fundraising campaign, which wrapped up on April the 7th. Although I will say that there's a couple of people, a couple of supporters who weren't available during the course of the campaign. They've already arranged to talk to me or to see me. So although the campaign right now is at $405 short of the $3,800 target, I will be able to chisel away at that, so to speak. And I'd invite all of you that are listening, that haven't contributed, haven't donated, whether you haven't contributed before to these efforts or just not lately, then please do so. Believe me, we'll take it. We'll put it towards good use. We'll make sure that our costs are paid for, the hosting costs for actionline.ca, where you can get all our podcasts as well as our additional reports. The various expenses that come up in the course of trying to conduct full-time, you know, devote myself full-time to investigations, to analysis, and a lot of interviews are going to be coming up, including with people whose families have been in the news with regards to crime, to 911 emergency response, and things of that nature. As well, talked with yet another city councilor today about getting them on the program. So two more lined up at this stage, and two more we're waiting to hear from. And then, of course, Mayor Scott Gillingham as well. So I'm going to try to, through the spring, ramp up the interview quotient here on the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. I know that those are very popular because I'm able to give a platform to individuals, including politicians, that because of the way the local media operates, they don't really get the opportunity to speak directly to matters that are there of concern of those councillors. I mean, some reporters have, teacher's pet. Could be it works in reverse too, right? That elected officials, whether they're city councilors, MPs, MLAs, they have favorite reporters. Reporters have their own favorites as well. One thing that is certain, as Graham Menzies, who was previously, I think he was the vice chair of the CRTC, and we follow each other on Twitter, and he has a lot of excellent observations about media, about journalism, about the state of what's going on in our country in terms of multiple scandals, etc. And he unloaded an excellent comment in his, I think it's a Substack that he has. And the quote is, if newspapers and broadcasters wish to maintain the public's trust, they'd be well advised to exercise their freedom while remembering it's no longer 1994. Their readers, listeners, and viewers know what they aren't covering, and they will want to know why. I cover those kinds of things, the things that the mainstream media doesn't cover, doesn't talk about, whether it's angles in certain stories, perspectives in certain stories, or whether, in fact, it's stories in and of themselves. We repeatedly told about individuals, about situations in this city involving, as I aforementioned, victims of crime. What goes on with public works and bike lanes and things like that? What goes on with hospital safety? Who addressed the safety of the nurses and patients at St. Boniface Hospital? Why, I think it was a Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. Yet one more reason why you should support this program. Go to the donate page on actionline.ca. Anything comes in the next while, I'll add up to that winter fundraising campaign. We'll get the hosting taken care of, some of the other bills taken care of, and keep moving forward, as I said, a lot. I've got, I think, I'm just staring at a list here. Seven or so interviews I'm trying to line up. One will be with the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, both city and provincial, the recent city and the more recent provincial budget. Hoping to have that one out on the weekend. Still trying to arrange the time to actually have the discussion with the Taxpayers Federation. And so again, that's why I ask for your support, so I can keep doing this work. And you'll hear things you're not going to hear anywhere else. You'll learn about things you're not going to learn about anywhere else. You'll have the information you need to engage in intelligent rebuttals with those who have these harebrained schemes, these harebrained ideas about what should be going on in society, what should be going on in legislation, what should be going on in policy, what should be going on, and in some cases is going on your streets and your neighborhoods, that you have to live with the consequences of, and you just know this is absolute garbage. So today, I'm going to focus to the provincial matters, and I'm swinging around more so to the health file. But I'll touch on a couple of other things as well, because there's an attitude that goes by, goes with governments, comes with governments of certain political stripes. And, so far, Wahb Kanu, as I've said in the past, he's exercised, as it's put in the business, caucus discipline. He's been able to keep the radicals in his caucus under control, but now he's handing them big budgets and mandates to follow, and in some cases they're coming up with their own ideas for mandates, and some of it, well, you know, they don't have a lot of experience in governing. A lot of these people, you know, they've never, for the most part, from what I can tell, they've never run an actual business. They don't really have a grasp of a lot of the things they're trying to deal with, and so governments inevitably will look to other provinces. How do they do it here? How do they do it there? And often they will look to provinces that are led by people who are like-minded ideologues as they are. Same political party, same political leanings. In this case, we know that the NDP apparatchiks fled after Greg Selinger's government fell, fled all the way to Alberta. Rachel Notley came into power, damn near ruined that province with these just the same morons that had helped ruin Manitoba, and they fled to Alberta, high paid jobs. Now a whole bunch of people, I don't know necessarily exactly from where, I assume somewhere from returning from Alberta, the Wahb Kanu government, they boosted pay like crazy for all sorts of political staff, communication staff, ready to spin things their way upon their election. And so you have these philosophies that are tried out in other jurisdictions. And then somebody says, hey, we should do it just like they do it. And in this case, British Columbia. God, don't you dare. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going wrong in healthcare in Manitoba, and how some, there are hints, people trying to push them towards the BC models. I'm going to go chapter and verse on what's going on in BC. You're not hearing it from the media in Winnipeg. Scandal after cover-up. Is that the path that Wahb Kanu's NDP wants to take? We'll talk about that right after this break.
The Great Canadian Talk Show is brought to you by The Hive Hair Company. From classic to funky, the styles of your life are at The Hive, in the heart of the Osborne Village at 175 Osborne. Call 452-4483 or online, thehivehaircompany.com.
Is your business plagued by thefts and break-ins? Is your residential property under siege by out-of-control crime and vandalism? You need effective safety measures to protect your property. Jamrock Security can help you today. We have the expertise to deliver the right solutions and get your security problems under control. Call 204-880-1564 or contact our website, jamrocksecurity.ca. Do security. Do it smart. Jamrock Security.
This episode of The Great Canadian Talk Show is sponsored by PKP Renovations and Repairs. We take pride in the neighborhoods we work in, serving the North End, West Kildonan, and the Maples Garden City area for over 20 years. Call 204-297-5446 or email us at info@pkprenovations.com. We help make sure Winnipeg has good homes for good people.
It's like beefs and bouquets. Well, not really.
I don't think this is a gold star award that Winnipeg should be proud of when you're featured in the Federal Conservatives' What Went Wrong in Canada scenarios, and Winnipeg's at the top of the class. So it's not something of a badge of honor, I think, for the current leadership at City Hall to wear.
You're listening to The Great Canadian Talk Show with Marty Gold.
Perhaps you or Peter Warren could tell us.
On actionline.ca.
Let's discuss healthcare in Manitoba. And I'm not even going to touch on what's going on, for instance, in long-term care facilities, of which I'm learning lots. And it's amazing how easy things in those facilities can go sideways because You know, protocols have to be adjusted towards the reality of what's on the floor in the ward. And so, for instance, I'll give you an example of one thing that goes wrong in personal care homes. I'm not going to get deep into it today, but just an example. If a facility shifts staff over from one, one wing, because they're short-staffed in another wing, they move somebody over to help out with the client care, the patient care, in terms of the feeding, the bathing, the personal care, getting in the bathroom, getting ready for bed, and all that. The protocol might say, well, the person who comes over is supposed to take direction from the person who's actually covering, on the shift, they're short staffed, they're filling in, and they'll take direction from somebody else. Go do this, go do that, go do the other thing. That's great until you tell I'm just going to use terms here that maybe aren't accurate, but just to give you an idea of what this is about. You tell the male care nurse or male ward clerk or whatever, you tell him, oh, here, go give, room 22 their bath or change their diaper or whatever. And room 22 might be a female who does not want to be attended to by somebody with a penis. For that matter, you could have somebody in room 23 who themselves has a penis and doesn't want to be intimately cared for by somebody of the same gender. You get the idea. These things are things that care homes have to be sensitive to, and protocols just override because there's no common sense. Now, what I'm saying is things that might look good on paper don't really translate in real life, especially when it comes to healthcare. Now, real life is something that kind of, escapes a lot of people sometimes once they get into government. For instance, today we see the announcement by the NDP of the Health Sciences Center going to be getting 50 additional patient beds. This included in the budget, 35 medical beds. I think they said 27 are already operational. One news story mentioned that. And I thought, actually, it said online, which is just the wrong, just a stupid way to talk. Stupid way to write something. 10 psychiatric beds. God knows that we need that. And 5 surgical beds. That was all included as part of the budget. And Wab Kanu, the premier, saying these beds will reduce overcrowding in the emergency department. Less time in waiting rooms. Our budget delivers to rebuild healthcare. Blah, 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 blah. The first thing that popped into my mind was, where's the staff coming from? Or, like, for this, will it require additional staff? I'm assuming the psychiatric beds, if you add 5 beds, I think it'll probably add some something towards the staffing needs, right? Makes sense? My sources tell me that some of these magic beds that Wab Kanu's government is producing comes from temporary beds that are now being labeled permanent, which is sort of like, previous governments would put a number up on the wall in a hallway, and all of a sudden you're not in a hallway, you're in a waiting area because there's a number, number 6 is put up on the wall. And I actually, boy, it's a long time ago, and I actually experienced that one time. They play these games, they play these tricks, and you'll hear more about that because the BC NDP, that rules British Columbia right now and is facing election, they're drowning in their own chicanery, as you'll hear. And the Manitoba NDP, are they going to fall into that trap? Seemingly they will, because they just like manipulating things. One outlet published a story about this HSC thing, and there was a quote that was pulled from it, and the quote was, it feels like a stronger partnership where there's a better exchange of information and data, and really working together as a team to really focus on what all Manitobans need to deliver the best healthcare we can. Now, the way the story presented it, it was a quote from the Health Sciences Center, but it didn't say from who. I asked them if they had an idea from who, and I didn't hear anything back. So, here's the platitudes, the words, the phrases, the partnership, working together, really focus, best healthcare. What's the headline from CBC hours later after 6 months of elbow grease to add workers to the province's healthcare system? Manitoba's NDP government says it's not ready to share how successful those efforts have been. It would be to laugh were it only funny, but it's not. Now let's go back to the budget that rolled out last week. And an item that I actually did cover in a recent podcast, like right after the budget, right? And there was something that I talked about and I touched on. That was with regards to a supervised consumption site. And that there are individuals that have even better ideas than supervised consumption sites. And this, of course, is a place where people are given drugs to inject. I suppose some of them are smoke, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that yet. And that will come up, as a matter of fact. And so there are people who have ideas. So there's $2.5 million put towards a supervised consumption site. Canoe, as I indicated, saying, well, we're going to have discussions. We want to get it right. They got to figure out where it's going to go. It's, of course, not going to go next door to his house. It won't go next door to Nanny Fontaine's house in Lindenwoods. It won't go next door to Bernadette Smith's house, the minister in charge. She lives, somewhere near Kildonan Park. It ain't going anywhere near their houses. It's going to go near somebody else's house or somebody else's business or somebody else's, you know, somebody owns property, and it's not going to go in the middle of a provincial park or something like that. No, it's going to go one way or the other near people who are not drug addicts and who, in some cases, may not have any great interest in being around the behavior associated with drug addiction, with psychosis, and with other things. Canoe saying that the province is considering a proposal from an Indigenous-led consortium to establish the site. Now, I also indicated in the previous episode where I touched on this that there was an individual who said that it was that wanted this expanded. They said it was a good day in Manitoba, saying, we hope it's the beginning of a provincial strategy will provide important life-saving service to other neighborhoods in Winnipeg and across the province. And I mentioned this person said they want the province to take a look at taking a further step to harm reduction by committing to safer supply, providing prescribed medications alternative to the toxic drug supply. Now, this coming from Kim Bailey, who's a director of prevention, testing, and wellness at Nine Circles Community Health Center. I'll mention, I believe I know Kim Bailey, or I used to know her. I believe we went to university together for a year, and I believe she married a very good friend of mine who is now the head of the University of Manitoba. So I haven't seen, I've seen this person in like 40 years. Here's where I ended up in life. They ended up in life saying that we need more safe injection sites in neighborhoods, and that Wabkanoo's government should be handing out, say, so-called safer supply. There's lots of work going on in the country to show the benefits of a safer supply strategy, she said. We should move quickly towards it. We should move quickly towards it. Now, Canoe, when questioned about this, told the media that they're moving one step at a time and will follow where the evidence leads. Let's talk about where the evidence leads for these kinds of ideas. 72 doctors in British Columbia, including several of the province's leading physicians, signed a letter criticizing Canada's safer supply programs. This was the end of March, arguing these programs are unscientific. They're being widely defrauded and hurting youth. Here's a quote. It is virtually unheard of for a potentially dangerous medical intervention to be expanded beyond a pilot project without significant evidence showing efficacy and similarly significant evidence showing an absence of harm. So what we have going on with safer supply is an experiment. A website called BreakingNeedles.com, going into this quite a bit, in particular in relation to British Columbia. Safer supply, referring to the distribution of clinically tested and approved recreational drugs. This article saying, pointing out dozens of addiction experts, of whom I've quoted a couple on this program, argue there's no evidence that safer supply works, and actually, in that case, it was about injection sites, because safe injection sites were not studied in regards to contemplation of the use of meth, right? Most studies which support the strategy, this says, use low-quality research methodologies. Now, you might think, oh, no, they never do that in Manitoba. Let me tell you what a low-quality methodology is. Your whole harm reduction practice here in Manitoba was based on a study in Baltimore in 1996 that did not have any contemplation of meth or fentanyl. This is the old style get high drugs in Baltimore in the late 80s and early 90s. And based on a study in Baltimore that had nothing to do with, and this relates to needle return rates, had nothing to do with the reality here, but they go, oh, well, we're going to use a study in Baltimore and that's going to be good enough for Manitoba. The harm reduction policies, when I looked into it, the praxis, which resulted in 2 million needles being given away, and how many of them landing in front of your house, in your back lane, in front of your playground, at your kids' schools. This is based on a study from 1996 that had nothing to do with people who were using more addictive and more harmful drugs. Now, as I read through this article, Dr. Mark Mallett, a hospitalist, as they put it, at Victoria General Hospital, meaning Victoria in Victoria, BC, said that the provincial government of BC spent nearly a year dismissing safer supply diversion as an urban myth. That's a quote. But recently, they've been forced to admit otherwise, even though Bonnie Henry should be the Brent Rusin of British Columbia. She assured the public diversion was being closely monitored. That was a lie. It's been 4 years since safer supply was expanded across Canada, and there's still no credible studies, you know, the programs or the unintended consequences. Here's a quote from, again, that doctor. It is impossible for anecdotes to rise to the level of evidence if no one is systematically collecting data. Now, think about that. No one is systematically collecting data. Okay? Hold on to that thought. Peter Menzies had another catch today. Headlines that you never would have imagined possible just a few years ago, he tweeted, and this from Czech News. That would be a TV station out in BC. Vancouver Island nurses raised concerns about open drug use in hospitals. Inhaling the fumes from people openly smoking drugs in hospitals. A memo from officials in Northern Health was leaked, and this was April 4th. The memo said decriminalization is linked to rising open drug use inside hospitals and instructed nurses to both allow it and not intervene. Is that what's coming to Manitoba? That the Canoe government's going to tolerate the consumption of these kinds of drugs right in front of medical staff and they're going to be told, stand down? I can tell you it's not the first time the term stand down might have been used in relation to something involving the Manitoba NDP government. The memo read in part, patients can use substances while in their room and that the staff should not call RCMP to go through personal belongings for a patient and do not call security to do the same. Can you believe that? Now, this is important that they're told don't call the RCMP. Staff, memo said, do not remove personal items from a patient's room, even if there's a knife or something considered a weapon under 4 inches long. So Adrian Dix, the BC Health Minister, an idiot of the first order, by the way, said the memo was worded poorly and no drug use or weapons are allowed in hospitals. That, of course, elicited gales of laughter from the nurses on Vancouver Island, saying they have had to walk through, here's the quote from Czech News, walk through toxic plumes of fentanyl from people smoking drugs. It got so bad. One island nurse was told not to breastfeed her child out of fear that the milk may be contaminated from drugs she had been exposed to work. A union steward spoke with Czech News last week. It's happening daily, said Laura Martin. I have people in tears on a daily basis talking to me about exposure incidents and incidents of violence and the impacts it's had on them, whether today or last week. And the fear of reporting because they've reported not when they have reported. Nothing has changed. Now, last week, Premier David Eby, feeling the heat, and there's more heat coming, he wouldn't concede there was a link between decriminalization and the issues in the hospital system. For instance, at the legislature, there was is it disinformation or misinformation? Politicians heard a drug particulate sensor was installed in the new baby ward of the Victoria General Hospital due to drug use by parents and families. and the need for staff to don respirators and move vulnerable babies. Don respirators? So I guess it was going on, even though Abby, the premier, said it wasn't. Island Health said that's partially true, but the device is a smoke detector and not a drug particulate sensor. And it's been installed in the emergency department, although more have been ordered from the maternity ward. See? So they tell half-truths and lies to try to squirm out of this. Now, let's go back to this part about the RCMP. The nurses told don't report to the RCMP. What came out? The RCMP gag order issued after BCNDP catch heat for diverted safe supply. Oh, so not only is the RCMP not supposed to find out about people using drugs in hospitals and endangering the health of nurses and doctors and clinical administrative staff, etc. There are a number of high-profile drug seizures of safer supply. And last month, the RCMP E Division issued a gag order on detachments, directing them to run all communications on hot-button public safety issues through headquarters. In the lead-up to the provincial election, this email dated March 11th, which apparently went out, to all RCMP detachments. The requirement for us at E Division to brief up and out has been almost a daily task, the writer said. So they're having to continually brief senior leadership and top officials at the Ministry of Public Safety and the Solicitor General. It's very clear we're in a pre-election time period. Oh. Hot button issues. All inquiries about hot button issues. So if I'm in the media and I want to ask RCMP in Nanaimo something or whatever, it has to go through Central Communications Command. What are those hot button issues? Drug seizures, decriminalization, gun violence, mental health related calls, violent or repeat offenders, bail reform, and more. Two detachments, before that memo came out, reported seizing thousands of highly addictive opioids diverted from the federal and provincial drug programs. Hydromorphone, more powerful than heroin. Fentanyl, oxycodone, morphine, stimulants, benzodiazepines. These are all provided and all diverted. This started in Ontario 7 years ago, BC 4 years ago. There's an alarming trend. Campbell River, February 28th. Several kilos of fentanyl, meth, and cocaine. March 7th, Prince George RCMP. 10,000 pharmaceutical pills. And this is funneling down to kids in high school, junior high, and I hope not elementary school, but I'm not, or middle school. I'm not holding my breath on that one. The drugs are being bulk collected, according to a senior investigator in Prince George, and then shipped out of province because there's no reason for these pills to be hoarded in that quantity. They've seized at least 18,000 pills between two detachments the last year, more than half of which is hydromorphone. But it was a press release in Prince George that stirred up the storm on the government because the Alberta Addictions Minister, Dan Williams, challenged BC to put a chemical identifier in the drugs to prove diversion wasn't happening. And Danielle Smith, the Premier of Alberta, hopped on that too, because these drugs are coming in Alberta as well as being funneled into playgrounds and schools in BC. Ebby deflected it. He downplayed it. He stopped short of agreeing that they would chemically trace the drugs. And then on March 11th, the RCMP Assistant Commissioner, John Brewer, released a statement that had just been crafted apparently that morning. There's currently no evidence to support a widespread diversion of safer supply drugs in the illicit market in BC or Canada. Really? And then the BC Solicitor General and the Addictions Minister, they both just kept parroting this in the legislature. A BC United critic, that would be one of the opposition parties, said she found out why there's no evidence of widespread diversion. The police have not been asked by government to collect it. I don't understand the hesitancy to commit to data collection. See how that word's come up repeatedly here? Data. Disclosure to the authorities. Asking the authorities to track this in a way where government can develop good, sound policy. A day after the statement from the RCMP, the Solicitor General, reneged on a February 29th commitment to the Northern Beat, this publication, to have his ministry collect and share data on how much hydromorphone had been seized by police in BC. Well, they'd already been doing their own investigation. And suddenly the detachments who were cooperating with sharing information said, no, gotta talk to HQ. And they provided a copy of the internal directive. Nobody, Solicitor General, RCMP, nobody has provided any data to show how much safer supply has been seized and how they know it's not the diversion isn't a problem. Then they turn around and they throw the cops under the bus where the Solicitor General said that the RCMP should have a mechanism in place to confirm and track diverted safe supply. A few weeks later, on April 3rd, the RCMP wasn't even sure, or the media rather, couldn't ascertain if the RCMP even knew that the ministry had said this, that the RCMP should be tracking it, and what the mechanism's supposed to be. And yet, this doesn't have to be complicated. You drop it, you know, you add to the forms you fill in, suspected safer supply box, tick it off, type of drug, where it was diverted. Now, what's going on in BC with safer supply? The media and public remain in the dark, according to this article, about how much taxpayer-funded addictive drugs have been sold by patients in organized crime drug markets and how much safer supply has been seized by police. So no wonder they want to keep silent about a hot-button topic. How's Wabkinu's government going to handle this? Uzoma Asaguara, her, Nahanni Fontaine, Bernadette Smith, the squad, they're all in favor of safer supply. What happens when they say, oh, but in BC, blah, 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 and they ignore that shit's hit the fan in BC? Because they will. You think the Winnipeg media is going to dig it up? Highly unlikely. That's why I'm getting it on the record. Now, that's not the only kind of scandal that goes on in BC, and I just want to draw the equivalency here with what we could be seeing, or what we better not be seeing under Wabkinu's government. They're also all committed to innovation and, get rid of the combustion engine and, save the planet, climate change hysteria, and all the rest of it. There is a program for electric vehicles in BC, and to make a fascinating story short, and it's along the lines of just when you think it's as bad as it gets worse. A small company revealed last week, after a newspaper broke the story about the department, that they had been asked to, pretty please, why don't you hire us, this being MNP, hire us to do your grant proposal at this enormous fee, and we'll take 20% off the back end, and you can apply for grants to develop these electric trucks. They said, we can't afford that. Well, guess what? Guess who administered the grants? MNP. So raking it on the front end, they raking it on the back end. The opposition catches on to this. They want an investigation. And Dave Eby's government, the NDP, in lockstep, voted against it, against calling in the RCMP. So you don't want the RCMP to know about drug use in hospitals. They don't want them to be keeping track of safe supply being diverted. They don't want to know about a racket. Is this not the definition of a racket? That the company that prepares the applications for grants then decides who gets the grants? This is so crazy. The government has asked the Auditor General and the Comptroller General to review the Clean BC grant process. Oh, they asked for a review. Actually, they're going to revamp it and review the program. They penalized this company. They cut them out of a public event. They complained. The government pretended they had never heard from these guys, even though they had met with ministerial officials in the legislature, in the office, in Victoria. And then they say, we're going to review the program. They hire MNP to review it. Myers Norris Penney's going to review the program that they've been administering, that they've been rigging. And so tonight, as I record this, on Monday, in a small but embarrassing procedural move, in order for the BCNDP to get the Attorney General to investigate MNP, they had asked the House to nullify the motion it voted down on Thursday to do the same thing. They were against it before they were for it. That, of course, is just prime NDP, and that is what you have to watch out for when it comes to what could be imported from British Columbia, when it comes to public policy involving drugs, clean technology, safer supply, all these things. The last thing we need is for Manitoba to be just like British Columbia under the NDP. I fear, however, that many of these ideologies, many of these concepts are going to be imported and already being imported inside the bureaucracy, entrenched in the DNA of the Canoe government. Ignoring evidence. Ignoring the will of communities. Ignoring favoritism, ignoring basically insider training, ignoring the way contracts and grants are being rigged. So it just gives you an idea of what to keep your eye on, what could be coming down the pike under the Wabkinew government. I'll be back to wrap this episode up right after this fast break.
Putting the people first, reality bites back with the Great Canadian Talk Show with Marty Gold.
I will keep an eye on all of these characters, all these media darlings. I will call them out when they gaslight you, and I especially will stick up for you when you have very real fears and concerns about public safety, about crime in downtown, about crime in the neighborhoods, and all the other things, because we deal in reality here.
For what really goes on in the streets, the courts, the legislature, and City Hall, it's the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast on actionline.ca, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Your voice.
The Great Canadian Talk Show podcast is always listening to you. Send in your comments, story tips, and ideas to MartyGoldLive@gmail.com, TGCTS, making sure your voice is heard.
When you support the Great Canadian Talk Show, your donation makes sure that the investigations, the interviews, the fact-finding, the truth-telling can carry on. When you sponsor the Great Canadian Talk Show, you're telling the community that you think their stories matter. Our public affairs coverage continues to make a difference, challenging the slanted media narratives and giving a voice to the community. When you provide funding for the Great Canadian Talk Show, you're supporting old-fashioned investigative reporting that matters. Support TGCTS today.
I got to tell you, in terms of what I just talked about, I just reread one part of this that I sort of skimmed through, and you can't imagine a government this corrupt heading into a provincial election. And here in Manitoba, we've already got a situation with a government that's got no idea how to grow the economy, wants to, basically tax people. They want to tax people out of their homes one way or the other, give school trustees, blank checks almost to continue to promote ideologies over education in our education system, in our elementary schools in particular, and in our high schools. You might have noticed in some media, Tom Broadbeck in particular, pointing out that the way the NDP tried to portray the budget and where the deficit was coming from and the situation they inherited, the spin, even Broadbeck now, who's now he's having buyer's remorse. Manitoba could be in for a good 3.5 years of buyer's remorse when it comes to the way you end the New Democratic Party, the socialists, handle your money, handle your tax dollars, hand out largesse, play favorites, rig things, punish people that aren't on their side. So obviously I'm going to have a lot more to do when it comes to provincial politics in the next while. I will have some news with regards to the opposition, the official opposition. I think in the next week or so, we'll talk a little bit about conservative politics and where it's headed in this province. As I mentioned, Canadian Taxpayers Federation going to review with me both the city and provincial budget. That'll be in the next week. Councillor Jason Schreier, still trying to line that up. I'll get to it. Couple of other cases that I mentioned involving 911. Mike Vajakis is going to be doing an interview with me about that situation, the death of his brother Kyriakos, the 911, the very inadequate and troublesome 911 response from the city of Winnipeg. I'll be getting into that. There's another couple of situations involving families and 911 response and police where those are also being lined up. I don't want to give too much away. And back on the civic side, Councillor Matt Allard taking a lot of heat in St. Boniface for a column that he wrote that was published in what used to be the Herald or Lance or whatever, that fell far short of people's expectations in discussing what happened with, in particular, with Happyland Park Pool, to a lesser degree with Windsor Park, which has gotten a 2-year reprieve. He made no mention of the fundraising efforts of his constituents to try to save their pool. No mention of that column at all. That stinks. There's other things going on around St. Boniface involving disorder, public safety, etc. that I have sent one matter in particular. I've sent Matt Allard an inquiry. And so there's going to be an episode where a substantial portion of it is going to be talking about what's going on in St. Boniface, what's going on in St. Boniface, the mood in St. Boniface, and the dissatisfaction with the city councillor. By the way, he's the only councillor I can find who does not have a 986 phone number for his office at City Hall. Although I'm told he has an office for some reason. Apparently, he uses his cell number. So I don't know how effective that is for people to get a hold of, you know, get a hold of the office to get ward things taken care of that maybe don't need the councillor directly. I'm going to try to find out more about that. Who knows? Maybe Matt Allard will finally do another interview. He did one with me right when he began in politics on City Circus on Shaw TV. We'll see if maybe, you know, once every 10 years, like a mini Halley's Comet, Allard will whoosh past the audience with a few pearls of wisdom and other things. We'll make him the offer, as we have to Councillor Luke's, Councillor Gilroy. Still haven't heard back, but I'm going to stay on them. And in fact, this whole topic of whether politicians get back to people or not, that's also going to be the subject of an upcoming podcast because of one of our listeners who has a few things to say. I think they're going to be focusing more so on certain provincial politicians. One in particular. So we're going to continue to do what we can to be your voice, to be your advocate, to be your watchdog, the Winnipeg watchdog, and keep an eye on the legislature as well. And federal politics coming up more and more. You notice that not one politician in Winnipeg, even though the Chinese lab hearings started in Ottawa on Monday night, I have not seen one politician at the provincial or civic level ever say a word about the fact that we had spies running around town trying to transport pathogens out from the lab downtown, the implications, whether people within Winnipeg were pressured. And that's before I get to the Chinese trying to rig the 2019 and 2021 elections and the prime minister's office pretending that, the prime minister's saying he never knew anything about it, but the PMO had been informed. We are heading into dangerous waters. I'm going to be here for you. I'm not saying I can solve every problem, but I can call them out. I can call out solutions too, and that's because I get great feedback from you, our audience. You can get a hold of me at any time. Comments, news tips, interact donations, gleefully accepted, might I add, martygoldlive@gmail.com. Otherwise, go to the donate page on actionline.ca, and you can get the link for both interact and for PayPal, or get a hold of me directly. There's going to be lots more content coming out. I'm going to continue to roll this through all the way through Passover, the end of the month, all the way through April. Going to try to churn out as much as I can with as much passion, as much interest in the topics. You know, I don't talk about things that don't interest me. Get that a lot on radio. You can tell that sometimes these hosts aren't interested. I'm interested in these topics. I know you're interested in these topics. Spread the word. Share these podcasts. Subscribe to the Spotify feed, for instance. And yes, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start working on the mechanics of putting out a specific Action Line podcast that'll cover City Hall. We're just trying to formulate what will and won't work. Just bear with me. But we're going to be diversifying a little bit, going to be trying to streamline the content. That's because of the donations that have come in, the support that's come in, which, again, I'm tremendously grateful for, that I'm able to continue the work that I started doing 40 years ago, standing up for the community, being a voice for the community, being your watchdog. That's because I was taught 40 years ago something that has never left my mind. You have the power, and I will always speak up for you. Thank you for listening.
What the legacy media won't talk about.
They're too busy covering ribbon cuttings and other such things.
He will.
Winnipeg Radio, it's moved more and more away from being dynamic, provocative, and closer to...
It's Marty Gold.
That's not the way it should be, especially with broadcast licenses issued by the CRTC. But that's their problem.
On the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast.
Not the power of CKY or CKRC, but we intend to try to match them in quality.
Thanks for listening to the Great Canadian Talk Show. If you want to email Marty, send it to tgcts1@gmail.com. Or follow him on Twitter @TGCTS.